The United States is home to more guns than any other country. It has the most people incarcerated, and many Americans place a premium on personal protection and home security. One of the major reasons for all of that could be fear. Our next guest says that since the early days of the Cold War, fear has done a lot to change the way we live, affecting everything from the architecture of our homes and neighborhoods to our laws about crime and punishment. And despite all the attempts to feel safer, she says, those anxieties haven't gone away. Elaine Tyler May is the Regents Professor of American Studies and History and Chair of the Department of History at the University of Minnesota. Her new book is Fortress America, How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy. Elaine, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We'll dig into the details of your book a little bit, but embracing fear, abandoning democracy. Can you talk about how that's working in America in 2017?
Well, this has a very long history, mm-hmm. and we often think that this kind of obsession with security has popped up since 9/11, and that before that time, Americans were a little bit oblivious to dangers that may or may not have faced them, but weren't as preoccupied. In fact, Americans have been preoccupied with fear, and particularly fear of personal harm, harm to their bodies, and harm from far away, as well as harm from very close by, from strangers, from others, from people they don't know. And it was really the early Cold War era that set the tone for this particular kind of fear. And there were two aspects to it. One was fear that the Soviet Union was going to launch a nuclear attack on the United States, and that if you happened to be in the path of that bomb, there was really nothing that the government could do to protect you. There was only self-protection. And so the government was very busy, and the civil defense authorities were very busy trying to help Americans understand the danger and help them figure out what they could do to protect themselves, because there really wasn't anything that the nation's leaders could do. And as a result, they were both socialized and in a way led to understand that danger was ever present and could hit at any moment. And at the same time, that self-sufficiency and independence and self-reliance and a focus on the family, all of these traditional American virtues, were the best way to protect yourself in the event of an attack. The second piece of this was that there were internal enemies, internal dangers, and these were communists who were supposedly in cahoots with leaders in the Soviet Union and sending secrets and undermining American values, indoctrinating children. And the fear of communists was completely out of proportion to the reality of communism in America, which is that American communists have never been particularly strong, never been a large group, and have largely been more or less interested in progressive politics in the United States. So that fear was also way out of proportion. Now, it's true that in the event of a nuclear attack, that was a real danger. Mm-hmm. And it's also true that all of the civil defense advice that citizens received from the government was really useless. And citizens knew that. They knew that if they built a shelter in their basement, that wasn't going to protect them from the effects of a nuclear bomb. That diving under their desks at school wasn't going to protect children from the effects of a nuclear bomb. They knew that these were what later scholars have called security theater. They were meant to reassure that there was something you could do. But in fact, those things really just increased fear, because it was really obvious there was nothing that anyone could do and that the danger was ever present.
But you write that we, even though we maybe knew it wasn't going to work, we did it. We built these bunker-style homes with what we thought were maybe bomb shelters. And you write, this is a theme you keep coming back to, we withdraw inward into our home fortress and out of the public sphere.
Exactly. Now, the number of actual fallout shelters that were built in the U.S. was pretty small. But that mentality that you just described was very true, and it began to affect the way people lived their lives on a day-to-day basis, beginning with a kind of inward focus on the home, a sense of the need for privacy, to be cut off from your neighbors, to be cut off from people who you might suspect might be, you know, interested in doing you harm. Now, the odd thing about that is that that particular kind of fear transcended the atomic age and Cold War fears of communism. And what happened was the idea of ever-present danger began to shift into a fear of crime and social unrest. And that's when it came to have a particularly raw domestic focus, particularly in the sense that in the 1960s and onward, as we began to get a lot of social movements for, you know, equality, the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, etc., that these were movements that unsettled people and made them feel that they were even more vulnerable. As women entered the public realm in greater numbers, as African Americans also achieved greater levels of legal equality and more opportunities for work and employment in various occupations, the sense that there was a change that was potentially dangerous at a time of perceptions of rising crime kind of all came together to heighten this sense of fear and shift those very present fears of constant danger from strangers.
We're talking to Elaine Tyler May. Her new book is Fortress America, How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy. And you write in the book that fear of crime, that personal fear of crime, entered into popular culture, including the Death Wish movies with Charles Bronson. Here's a moment in the first installment where Bronson's character is getting schooled on the benefits of owning a firearm.
This is gun country. Can't even own a handgun in New York City. Out here, I hardly know a man that doesn't own one. And I'll tell you something, unlike your city, we can walk our streets and through our parks at night and feel safe.
That was in the movies, and you're right, that was in the politics. Can we walk our streets? Can we feel safe? Can we protect ourselves?
Right, and that's a great example, because what's so interesting about all of this, the push for guns, the push for locks on the doors, the push for women to stay off the streets because they're dangerous and strangers are always on the lookout to attack, the truth of the matter is the home is the most dangerous place for American citizens. Most violent crimes that take place in this country take place within the home by relatives or personal acquaintances. And this message that you're safest at home and that the real danger facing you is stranger danger has never been true. It just has never been true. And yet that is how danger has been cast, largely by political leaders and by the media, because it's a way of gaining a measure of authority and also, you know, certainly for the media, a way of gaining listeners or readers, and for political candidates, a way of getting votes. You scare the public, and then you say, we can fix it for you. I am a law and order candidate. I am going to create, you know, stricter laws. We're going to put more people in prison. We're going to crack down on crime. And those messages have been effective. Have they made anyone safer? Not at all. They've led to an overcrowding of our prisons with people who shouldn't be there, particularly African Americans. You know, we have a huge crisis of mass incarceration, and we can really trace that back to this fear-mongering that's been going on since the 1960s. And even more to the point, as violent crime has actually diminished over the last several decades, fear of crime has gone up, which just shows you that there's a disconnect between the reality of the situation and people's own fears.
And I want to talk about that point. You write about that difference between crime statistics and perception of crime statistics. Here's a listen to former House Speaker Newt Gingrich talking at last year's Republican National Convention, talking here with CNN's Allison Camerota about crime rates in the U.S.
The average American, I will bet you this morning, does not think crime is down, does not think they are safer.
But it is, we are safer, and it is down.
No, that's your view.
What I said is also a fact.
The average American feels when you can walk into a nightclub and get killed, when you can go to a party in a county government building and get killed, people don't think that their government's protecting them.
And yeah, there's that distinction. And as you say, crime numbers, though, in overall, they've gone up a little. Violent crime in the United States over the last couple years, still very low compared, say, to the 80s and 90s. But as Newt Gingrich says, the average American doesn't feel that.
Right. And Gingrich there is saying that the average American is correct to be afraid, whereas, in fact, the likelihood of dying or being harmed in one of these terrible, and they are terrible, these terrible mass shootings is really very, very low compared to the possibility of being harmed within your own home and by people that you know. And we really don't understand that the fear of strangers has been drummed into us for decades.
We're talking to Elaine Tyler May, professor of American Studies and History at the University of Minnesota. Her new book is called Fortress America, How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy. She writes that fear in a lot of ways has shaped our modern American life, our neighborhoods, our politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think American society is too fearful? Do you see fear or distrust affecting even the social fabric of your neighborhood? Are there things that you're fearful of where you live? Do we put too much emphasis on our concern that a stranger will do us harm? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Historian Elaine Tyler May stays with us. Her new book is Fortress America, How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we are in America too fearful, too worried about crime, out of proportion to the reality of crime? Are we locking up too many people? And does this affect your life? Does it affect decisions like whether or not to own a firearm, to have a home security system, the neighborhood you live in? Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Doug is with us in Stevens Point. Doug, hi.
Hi. I actually was just thinking about a second thing. So I got two things. One, when I was a kid, I was born in the early 80s. My parents told me, stay away from strangers. Strangers are dangerous. You know, be careful of anybody that's got candy in a van and that sort of thing. And I didn't know if that had an effect on us as adults, since we were taught that as children. And the other thing is, everybody is hooked into social media where a ton of hateful and fearful things are spread all over the place. People are constantly hooked into that. How do you get away from it?
Doug, thanks. Two interesting questions there. We were brought up, I was too to a certain extent, Elaine, worry about strangers. Is that affecting us now as grown-ups?
Well, I think it is. And thank you, Doug. Those are two really, really good and interesting questions. One of the interesting things about how we are raised as children, I think that the story of don't talk to strangers and don't go into somebody's car because they're offering you candy, those kinds of messages have been around for a very long time. What is relatively new, and I think is an effect of the increasing level of fear, is the way that children are now followed around and watched by their parents or their friends' parents. There's very little, bye, Mom, I'm going out to play. Okay, come back at dinner time. And the kid goes off and plays around in the neighborhood with friends and then comes back for dinner. That kind of what is now known as free-range children, I find it a strange but interesting term, has now become very rare and is an answer or a alternative to the way in which children are often monitored, which is the other term is the helicopter parenting. So you have these two kinds of views of parenting, and many parents today admit, and it's so interesting because there have been studies that have actually interviewed parents today, and they say, I had much more freedom when I was a child to just roam around, to ride my bike to school, to go out and play with my friends. And now I don't allow my children to do the very things that I did as a child. And the reason is they feel that the world is more dangerous. But in fact, it really isn't. And that's what's kind of tragic about this, because it's inhibiting children's ability to be really independent and to grow up feeling strong and secure, with a sense that they have their own strength and their own intuition about the world they live in.
And to his other point about social media, and I think, 24-hour media access in general, in the old days, something bad happened somewhere. You read about it maybe the next day in the newspaper. You saw it once in the evening news. Now you have the potential, we have the potential to obsess over it, follow it, get every bit of detail about that that we can. It's going to loom larger in our minds.
Yes, absolutely. And this has also increased. The media has always focused on the rare and heinous crimes. That's not new in itself. The adage that if it bleeds, it leads, that those things sell newspapers, they bring more viewers to television news programs. But it has gotten a lot worse with the proliferation of first cable news. And now, you know, as Doug pointed out, social media has really heightened this. So our ways of communicating with each other, rather than making us more trusting of each other and creating more bonds as a society for the common good, it's made us more afraid of each other, and that's really tragic.
Thanks a lot for that call, Doug. We're talking to Elaine Tyler May from the University of Minnesota. Her new book is Fortress America, How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy. Back to your calls now. Abraham is with us in Green Bay. Abraham, hi.
Hi. I wanted to, give an example of something that the guest brought up and also then ask a follow-up question. The example is the guest earlier said that the politicians in our country beat the drums and paint bleak pictures of the country and then tell us that they are men or women of the law, mostly men, though. Proposes fixes for us. An example of this is our current president. Throughout his campaign, specifically on his inaugural speech, he painted this bleak picture of the country, that anybody who hadn't lived here, who hadn't known anything about, would most certainly try to stay the heck away from.
And I want to give a listen, Abraham, to a clip of that inaugural address from President Trump.
And the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Elaine, Abraham was pointing to that speech, and American carnage definitely got a lot of attention. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, and Abraham, thanks for that observation and that question. It's not new. I think that the first major national presidential election to focus overwhelmingly on street crime and law and order was actually 1968. That's how far back it goes. And so there are lots of precedents. I agree that Trump actually made this a much louder drumbeat. He knew this was an issue that could get a lot of emotion on the part of his listeners. And he was obviously inciting fear, because the more people are afraid, the more they can be controlled by people, leaders who say, I've got the solution, I'm going to fix it all. Now, it's also true that the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, have used law and order as campaign issues. But the way in which this issue has increased is quite striking, especially in light of the fact that violent crime has decreased since the 1990s, quite dramatically. And so what we hear in Trump's address there that was just played is really addressing something that isn't actually reflecting the reality of the country that we are living in today, and it serves to further drive us away from each other, to drive citizen from citizen and neighbor from neighbor and people of different races and backgrounds from each other, and that's very damaging. It damages our democracy. The only way we can have a thriving democracy is through trust and a belief in the common good.
And I want to, we just have a minute and a half left or so, Elaine, I want to get into that point a little further. People have talked over the years about the public sphere being necessary for a thriving democracy, a civic forum where people can engage with each other. If we're retreating into our homes, if we're in fear, we're afraid to talk to the other people on the streets, what does that do for democracy?
Well, it really destroys it, frankly. It really diminishes our ability to function as a working democracy. And that is truly tragic. And it is certainly my hope that the country is beginning to wake up to that fact and come together to reclaim the country that relies on trusting one another, on believing that the common good is important, believing that we have to protect and sustain our democracy, believing that the government represents us, is not our enemy, but is actually our representation to fulfill the will of the people. And we have a long way to go to get there, but I'm a hopeful person, in spite of the dismal book that I wrote. I am hopeful, and my book ends on the note of hope that Americans will wake up, realize that democracy is actually being threatened, and will come together to reclaim it.
Elaine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
That's Elaine Tyler-May. She's a professor of American Studies and History at the University of Minnesota. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Fortress America: How We Embraced Fear and Abandoned Democracy.